I've never been the most talented player on my team. Probably never will be. I just work incredibly hard. I have a great group of guys around me. They really humble me and continue to let me know you have to always work. This is what got you here, and this is what's going to keep me here. Just knowing what got me into the league, and that was defense. I think whenever you make your mark in this league, each and every year you can show that you can do something a little better, as long as you work on it, of course. I think that's it. I always have to be true to myself off the floor, of course, but the exact same way on the court. I got to continually guard, but now, you know, maybe I can score a little bit more.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of The Open Floor. This is Lee Jenkins from Sports Illustrated. And today's guest is Jimmy Butler of the Chicago Bulls. And we'll be joined by Jimmy in a few minutes. But first, I wanted to have on Ben Golliver, who wrote one of my favorite NBA stories of the past few years last season. And it was a profile of Jimmy Butler and really one of the first times I think that a writer has really gone inside Jimmy Butler's rather extraordinary journey to making it all the way to the NBA. And Ben, first off, thanks for coming on today.
Well, thanks for having me, Lee. How's it going?
Oh, it's great. It's great. You know, I'm just kind of going back and reading that story you wrote about Jimmy before I interviewed him. And, you know, there's so much in there. You know, his life was so rich kind of even before he got to the league. And I think it's one of those stories that some people know, but not everybody knows. And I was wondering if you could kind of just fill people in, even review with me a little bit, you know, what you recall of reporting that story and what you learned about his path.
I mean, Lee, you've written a lot more profiles than I have, but you'll probably come across this, you know, writing them. But it was one of those things where the people I would talk to around Jimmy would always kind of keep telling me, hey, tread carefully, you know, like kind of watch what you say, watch how you ask these questions. And I think ultimately, you know, his origin story or his growing up story is still really painful for him. I mean, the nuts and bolts version, you know, he was homeless and kind of bouncing around for multiple years. You know, during high school, he didn't have, you know, his father figure active in his life on a daily basis when he was in high school. His mom kicked him out of the house and, you know, kind of a bit of anger. And, you know, really, he ultimately was kind of subsisting by himself, you know, for multiple years with the help of some friends. You know, eventually he was taken in by, you know, what he would refer to now as sort of his family. You know, somebody he had met, you know, through playing basketball and someone who was willing to kind of let him, you know, crash in his bedroom. And, you know, ultimately he goes from that to junior college to, you know, getting, you know, very limited interest from D1 schools. He makes it at Marquette. You know, he works hard there, has some great influences in Buzz Williams as the coach and NBA guys like Wesley Matthews, you know, giving him some guidance. He play into the very end of the first round of his draft, and he's kind of a bit player for the Bulls early in his career, kind of makes a name for himself as this energy guy who's just kind of tirelessly chasing LeBron around during the playoffs. And then last year, he has this unbelievable explosion, most improved player, all-star, you know, real breakout. And now I think he's poised to be sort of the face of the Chicago franchise going forward, kind of their franchise guy. And so all of this has happened to him, you know, over the course of what, a decade. So to go from, you know, not knowing where you're going to get your meal to, you know, max contract franchise guy in that short of a period of time is pretty remarkable.
Look, there are so many guys in the league who have, you know, really difficult upbringings, really, you know, tough stories to tell, tough stories to read. But getting kicked out of your own home at 13 is kind of, I mean, it's really sort of next level adversity. What, when you were talking about that with him, how much of that was he willing to share? How much of it, when you said, say, tread carefully, how did you kind of get to some of that? Because I'm sure it is very painful.
Yeah, the interesting about Jimmy is, you know, like a lot of NBA guys, he loves talking about basketball. So that was sort of how I tried to frame it with him, is, you know, getting a sense for where did the nature of his game come from. And I think, you know, people use the word relentless with him, nonstop, tireless. You know, he plays these just gigantic minutes, you know, for Thibodeau previously, but now for Hoiberg still. And he's just always on the go. And I was really trying to kind of connect for him, you know, basketball to the personal reasons. You know, why are you this way on the court? what happened, during those formative years that kind of made you that way. And ultimately, he could kind of see that parallel. And he really was just saying, look, you can't slow down. You can't turn around. You can't feel sorry for yourself. You just kind of have to keep going when you're in that kind of a situation where, you're kind of living a day-to-day existence and you could be kicked out of wherever you're living if somebody, comes home and says they're tired of you. It's time to move on. And now you have to start over and do it again. And I think, he saw in himself lots of different impacts, from that time. He remembered being, really overly cocky when he was in high school. He would read stories online or in the newspaper about Derrick Rose, who was that year's number one recruit. He would kind of, think in his own head and brag to his teammates, like, well, let Derrick Rose come down here. I'll score 40 points on him. And, that kind of talk was just a random kid in Tomball, Texas. At that point, I was kind of laughing at him, like, who are you to even say this? You're not even really getting recruited in college. And of course, Rose is the number one recruit and ultimately the number one draft pick. So I think there was some side effects, like, the cockiness, acting out in school, getting in trouble, but then also, some of the reclusion as well. I mean, personally, he's very private still to this day. And I think very hesitant to share, his feelings about his experiences or much of anything with people except those who are very, very close to him. He lives in Chicago with some of the same people who he was living with when he was in high school. He refers to his adopted mom as mommy and calls her regularly. She's always texting him before every game, watches every single game that he plays on an iPad. So they're very tight-knit that way, but they remember when he first kind of came into their house in high school, he would almost hide upstairs. He didn't want to be seen as a burden. He was very reluctant to accept even food from them because he was so concerned about being able to kind of stay there and, be able to have a place to live that he didn't want to seem like he was imposing. And then ultimately he kind of turned that and became a part of the family. And his, like the younger siblings all look up to him almost like a blood brother. And he has a very, very close relationships with all of them. And I think part of that was, once he realized he could kind of fit in, he wanted to go all the way with it. So he sees some of these impacts, from that experience. He's able to kind of talk about them, but it's not something that he enjoys talking about. He would much rather talk about, what comes next for the Bulls. How are they going to dig out of this kind of slump this season? He'd much rather talk about, what's the future going to hold as opposed to kind of dwelling on what I think is a pretty painful past for him.
And speaking of the Bulls, how do you think this whole thing plays out? Him and Rose and, this chapter of Chicago basketball, Noah, Gasol. What do you think is the end game here?
Well, it's, they kind of rolled the dice with the coaching change. And I think at the time they did it, they felt like they had no choice. They had to change coaches. And then they felt like, Hoiberg was definitely the best candidate available to them. So I understand that decision making. But once you kind of made those calls, you had to be prepared to live with the consequences that a lot of the players who thrived in the previous regime aren't really great fits for what Hoiberg wants to do. Actually, I think Jimmy's the best fit. I mean, I think he kind of fits the goal of what Hoiberg wants to play in terms of, kind of pushing tempo, spreading the court, being able to be like a pick and roll guy. I think Jimmy can do that. If you surround him with shooters, he's going to be able to find those shooters. And then he's just a very reliable defensive presence. So I think he kind of works in almost any system that way. But when I go down the list of the other, highly paid players, whether it's Derrick Rose, Noah, Gasol, all of those guys to me are kind of questionable fits long term. I don't know how much sense it makes. And I also think there's an underlying tension between, Rose and Jimmy in terms of who is the alpha guy. And I just don't think that, Derek at this point is consistent enough with his health to be considered that player, even if maybe he has more raw potential or he had more raw talent at his peak than Jimmy will ever have. So at some point, you kind of have to choose between those two. I think I don't really see them being a great pairing, going forward long term. And so I could easily see something where, this summer, Chicago decides it's time to retool around Jimmy. He's their longest term contract. He's their biggest, dollar player going forward. And he's the best fit with what Hoiberg wants to do. But there is an irony there in that personality wise, Jimmy and Hoiberg are like total polar opposites. I mean, Jimmy's totally used to the screaming coaches, the Thibodeaus and the Buzz Williams of the world, who are going to stay on him constantly and, harp on every little thing. He's totally used to that as compared to, Hoiberg's kind of more easygoing style. So I think that is the one question. And maybe Jimmy's health is another question, too, about, going forward with him as your main guy. But I think that's probably the best play here. To me, this current Bulls era really took a heavy, heavy hit last year during the playoffs when LeBron hits the game winner and then they fold in game six. That really seemed like the beginning of the end. It was kind of like the curtain call for these guys.
And he likes that heavy-handed approach, doesn't he? And when he talks about Buzz, Tibbs, he sounds a little bit wistful.
Totally. And I think it goes back. I mean, if you want to play psychologist, it goes back to the father figure aspect, right? I mean, he needs somebody to get on him to kind of kick him in the butt and tell him what he should and shouldn't be doing and show him the right way. And he looks at, Buzz like somebody who saved his life almost, and kind of gave him this opportunity. And he's very, very loyal to Buzz. He surprised Buzz on his birthday one year, just showed up in his driveway and, spent the entire day going to like a pizza parlor and having birthday cake and all this stuff with Buzz and his kids. And it's totally the personality aspect of searching for that father figure, that leadership. And, I think ultimately, Thibodeau, clearly he wears on people. And I think that was a pretty common sentiment among a lot of the players in the Bulls locker room is like, he sets the tone, but at some point you need to kind of hear a different voice. And so it didn't surprise me that this year, Jimmy was the one to say, come on, Fred, coach us harder a little bit, because I think number one, he always wants that. He's seeking that. And I think number two, he wanted to give Fred some cover too, and just say, hey, I've got your back here. If you need to, step up and get on people for not playing defense or be a little tougher in practice or yell a little bit more or whatever it might be, like realize that you're not going to alienate me by doing that. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that that's worked. I think there's still a feeling out process there between, Fred Hoiberg and the team. The inconsistency of their play this season, especially down the stretch, has been pretty troubling. And, honestly, I think when you're looking at the teams in the Eastern Conference, like who are the biggest disappointments, I think you got to put them, pretty close to the top of the list this year.
Maybe this doesn't matter as much in this age, but is this guy the point guard? I mean, is he a point guard or what position does he play?
Yeah, I think he views himself as being able to play that role, like lead ball handler role. I think he definitely wants the touches and the responsibility. And certainly I think he late in games, I think he's looking for more of that. He referred to himself as a point guard when I interviewed him last year. But to me, he's more prototypically that two guard. And I think ultimately, you want to pair him with a really good shooting point guard, who's a more natural defender, at the one position. Like that's kind of the ultimate pairing with Jimmy, so that he's able to kind of handle whoever the other team's, best wing is, because he's so physical, and that's really where you want to use his defensive skills. But offensively, yeah, he's way more comfortable with the ball in his hands. I think he's very unselfish, and that dates back to the Marquette days too, because, he was basically under orders practically not to shoot, like he would be instructed to get offensive rebounds and immediately pass it out to his teammates. I mean, that was sort of what Buzz pulled him at Marquette. And so there's some of that still in his mind, even though he's now a 20 points per game scorer and all-star and all of those things, he's not always looking for his own number. I mean, he's definitely trying to move the ball and keep the flow going. So that's kind of why I think, he makes sense with what Hoiberg wants to do more than some of these other players do. But I still think you'd be running a little bit too much of a risk if you tried to make him that job full time. I think you got to have another established ball handler to play alongside him.
Yeah, I mean, even as the team struggled, it's just amazing to think when you were reporting that story a year ago, he was a most improved guy. He was kind of a burgeoning star. And now here he is and arguably the face of that franchise and really the centerpiece for what they have moving forward.
Hey, Lee, one thing real quick I forgot to mention, too, about how he views his story. I mean, he sees it as like having come full circle, too, because he's also recently reestablished relationships with both of his parents, including his mom, who kicked him out. He spends time in the offseason with his father, who was sort of not an active presence in his life during that time period. And so he very much sees himself as trying to be emblematic of forgiveness and not holding the grudge and, So I think that that's another thing to take away from this story too, is that one reason why he's always trying to look forward rather than kind of dwell on the past is because he doesn't want to get stuck there. He wants to be able to form these or reform these relationships maybe that he didn't have in the past.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. So Ben, I really appreciate your joining us, and I've urged everybody, if you haven't already, to get in that SI vault and read Ben Golliver's incredible story on Jimmy Butler.
All right, thanks, Lee.
We'd now like to welcome to the open floor Jimmy Butler, who 5 years ago was the last pick in the first round, and today is one of the best two-way players in the NBA and arguably the best player on the Bulls. Jimmy, thanks for being here.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Is knee okay right now or a little better than last night?
Yeah, it's a little better. We still got a ways to go, but I'll be fine, of course.
Good, good. You're partnering with Kellogg's for the second year in a row for a program for No Kid Hungry, and you and Kellogg's are donating $25,000. And I know a lot of guys, you know, do promotions like this, programs like this. You probably have. But I was kind of wondering where this all started for you.
Oh, man, because I was a kid at one point in time. And now that I'm, you know, older, I understand how important breakfast is. Like, I get on my brothers, I get on my trainers, I get on everybody, because they have to eat breakfast just like I have to eat breakfast. So you can only imagine what breakfast can do for a child, and how it gets your body going in the right direction, how it's throwing your mind out the right way each and every day. And I truly believe that children are the future of this world, and they can be whatever they want to be. But I think if you're treating your body well and getting your mind started the right way, then you're moving positively.
When you first heard about this, did it hit home a little bit more for you, given your whole background and where you came from and everything that happened with you?
Oh, most definitely. But I mean, even more than that, I think over the years, I've just learned how to take care of my body and to always fuel your body at the right time. Like, I think my main thing was you sleep so long through the night that you have to eat in order to get your body moving the right way whenever you start out the day. But I think the reason that it really started, I really started to pay attention to breakfast was whenever I was in college and I didn't eat breakfast one day, and my strength coach actually made me sit down in front of the whole team early in the morning before we lifted weights and read a book for an hour on how important breakfast was. Like, that was when I actually started to eat breakfast every single day.
So that was like a guidebook or something?
To take truth, I don't know what type of book it was, but it was just telling you like what breakfast can do for you, what are the good things to eat for breakfast. And his name's Todd Smith, and I'll never forget him for that. I mean, he made me look kind of crazy. But that was when I was like, okay, maybe breakfast is kind of important. And if I don't want to have to be embarrassed and read a book again in front of everybody, I better eat it.
When you were a kid, though, I mean, you knew what it was, didn't you, to be hungry?
I didn't know what it was to be hungry. I ate food, for sure. I'm not going to say that I ate breakfast every day, but I definitely had food to eat. We're not going to say that I went starving by any means.
Your story, everything you came from, you know, growing up in Texas and everything, I think some people know it, probably a lot of your fans know it, but maybe not everybody knows it. Is it something you look back on? Is it, you know, something that kind of still is in you and motivates you?
No, not at all. I think you can never let the past define you. I'm the person I am today because of it, yes, but that doesn't define me by any means. I think moving forward, I have to be stuck in the moment. I have to continue to want to better myself, use my platform to better others and show people the way. And especially in breakfast, but in anything else in life, if you're stuck in your circumstance, then you choose to be that way. I think that if you move forward and you move in a positive direction, the right way, you can be, you can say and do whatever you want.
When did that happen for you, do you think? Like, when did you turn in a positive direction? Because I know for a while it probably felt like you probably didn't see that way.
I've always been a positive person. I've always had the utmost confidence in myself. And you'd always hear me say how I think I can do something. Even if I didn't believe it, I just always know how you can speak things into existence. I think I learned that at a young age, and I definitely started to believe it whenever I got to college. I learned more about myself, obviously the game of basketball. And then more than anything, how this game of basketball could take me places to where I could try to change the world in my own ways. I think that's that's what I look forward to the most, how I can use basketball to take me places to where I could change the way things are done, the way things are handled. And for me, this is big. I mean, I love kids. You can ask anybody that knows me. I love kids. I love food also. So why not join with Kellogg's and get kids breakfast?
So because this is about kids, I want to ask you a little bit about when you were a kid and you're 13 years old and all of a sudden you're, you know, out of your own house. You're not living at home anymore. Kind of, I don't know if you're on your own or with friends. Where was your head right then? Like, what were you thinking about at that time about kind of just how to stabilize your own childhood?
Basketball. I've always thought about basketball. Basketball was always something that I could get my mind away from whenever I was troubled, whenever something was on my mind. I think if I was shooting a basketball, dribbling a basketball, it always helped. That's when my love for the game started. I was never really that good, to tell you the truth, but I just knew that with basketball, everything would turn around and be okay.
Did you always have the energy you play with now? Did you always have that even when back then? I don't know if, you know, you were probably weren't as nourished as maybe you would have wanted to be, or kind of didn't have all the food you wanted to have. Did you still feel like you always had that kind of energy?
Oh, no. Because I wasn't really that good of a basketball player. Like, I think people think that I'm joking. Back then, I wasn't good. I just went to Tomball, and I was probably more athletic than everybody. But I never really, you know, studied the game and practiced the way I should have. Now it's a different story. Now I'm, 26 years old. I take care of my body the right way, eat the right food, go to sleep. And then, of course, I'm staying in the gym. But I just think that back then it wasn't all about hustle and all of that stuff. It was just a way out for me.
What role did Michelle Lambert and that family play for you?
I mean, they were huge. I talk to them a lot still today. Actually, my little brother's birthday yesterday. But I talk to everybody now. I think we're on a great page because I've grown up. I got a lot of love for everybody. I want to help everybody. I've learned that with who I am and the way that I was raised, that basketball has always brought me closer to people. So now that, you know, I play on national TV, everybody's watching. So I think everybody's a fan, no matter where they're at, what role they play in my life. So I think it just gives everybody something to talk about.
Did it take a while to kind of get past, you know, not just moving in with a new family and, you know, having to adapt into a new home and all of that, but just kind of, how did you make that transition? How does a kid do that, like midway through, you know, kind of get absorbed into a new family? What was that like emotionally and everything?
I'm fine, but I feel like, man, that's so far behind that I don't even think about it anymore. I try to focus on the right now.
So when you talk to kids, you don't even use it as an example for them?
Never. I would never use that as an example, only because nobody can change that. What I talk to kids now about is your future. How can you help your future?
You know, a lot of guys get, you know, the big contract and they lose some of that hunger, if you will. And, you know, you had that last summer and then you lost Tibbs, who I'm sure pushed you like crazy. Were you worried that might happen? Was there ever sort of a feeling like, you know, will I kind of be as hungry? Will I play the same way and have the same kind of an edge?
Oh, no, that never crossed my mind because I've never been the most talented player on my team. Probably never will be. I just work incredibly hard. I have a great group of guys around me that are always with me. If you were to see me walking into a game or going to dinner, I'll ask my group of guys, and they really humble me and continue to let me know you have to always work. This is what got you here, and this is what's going to keep me here.
Who are those guys? Like guys from home or from college, or who are they?
From college, from home, my trainer, my basketball trainer, my weight and strength guy. I mean, all the way up to my agents. I think that they're a new family for me because they're always keeping me moving in the right direction, letting me know when I'm doing something wrong. Obviously, when I'm doing something right, but more than anything, just to remind me to keep being who I am. Don't change for the world, no matter how much money you make, how famous you become. You know, always be true to who you are.
There aren't that many truly elite two-way players. You know, I mean, obviously you're one, Paul George is one, Kawhi is one. What kind of makes somebody, even when you're scoring the way you've been scoring all season and doing the things offensively, to still bring it on the defensive end and to kind of have the energy to play both? What do you feel like is there? Like, what kind of things do you tap into to still be able to kind of have, to be able to do both things?
Just knowing what got me into the league, and that was defense. I think whenever you make your mark in this league, each and every year you can show that you can do something a little better, as long as you work on it, of course. I think that's it. I always have to be true to myself off the floor, of course, but the exact same way on the court. I got to continually guard, but now, you know, maybe I can score a little bit more. Maybe I can take a little more difficult shots or use a pick and roll more, whatever it may be. But I always got to pride myself on defense and let my defense lead to my offense.
Was that Tibbs' influence or was that something that went back to Marquette?
It started at Marquette for me. I think Buzz was a big influence on my life. He's been a man and a basketball player. Just showing me how your confidence comes from your work. That's one thing I remembered him saying every single day. And I'll never forget it. And then also just how hard you have to play every single night, every single possession to give your team a chance to win. And it's the same way in college as it is in the NBA. You got to play hard if you want to be successful.
When you're facing, you know, when your assignment's a great player, you know, a star player, and you know you're going to have to exert a ton on defense, are you thinking a night like that, maybe I won't be able to score as much, maybe I have to give a little more on the defensive end and vice versa if you have a matchup that maybe isn't quite as demanding? I mean, do you think that way, or is that shortcutting it?
No, it's not really shortcutting it, but, I mean, there's different situations for each and every night. Maybe one of my other teammates has it going. You got to get that guy the ball. Maybe I just have to key in. Maybe that's my job for this particular game. Key in on defense. Stop my guy from scoring whatever it may be. You know, obviously I may have to score points. Yes, I think that's part of being a two-way player. But it just all depends on the circumstance on any given night.
That must be tough to think that way. But does that plan change given kind of the way the flow of the game is going, or is that something you sort of decide in advance?
No, I don't think the plans ever change. I think I'm always supposed to do whatever my team needs me to do to win. I've learned that over the years for sure, and it's not going to change. I think that all I'm ever about is winning. So whether it's playing defense or scoring points, a win is a win.
A year ago, you were becoming a star in this league, and now you're at the point where it's on you. You're the voice in the locker room, you know, one of the faces of the franchise, a guy people look to. What's that transition been like? Has it been tricky at all? Is it what you expected?
It's hard. I think that when you look at the way that roles have changed and how our team has changed, I think people look at me to do a lot more, and I'm not used to it because I've never been in that situation. I think that, you know, it's a learning curve for everybody, but I have to continually learn. You know, I have to continue to learn on the fly. I can't just stop and be content with where I am. I have to continue to be, I guess, one of the best players on my team in the most humble way possible and just help us win games.
What's your leadership style like?
I don't know. I think I lead by example. I know that whenever I go out there every night, I give my all. I think that's one way to lead.
I mean, is that something you think is you're going to have to kind of develop with time? It's like it can't all happen all at once, I realize. But, like, is that sort of when you think about your next, like, the next step in your evolution, is that part of it, or what would you say it is?
I would say it's a big part of it. I think that, you know, as I grow into this league, it's supposed to be that way when it comes to, you know, if you get paid all that money, if you're an all-star, I mean, you got to be a better leader. I'm learning, man, to tell you the truth. I don't think that it's easy by any means, but I think everybody's different. I think it takes, more time for others, less time for others. I think some are born that way. Some pick it up at an early age. But all in all, I think everybody needs to find a way to lead some way or another. And that's what I'm doing right now. On the court, obviously, but also off the court with Kellogg's. I'm leading to, for kids, you know, eat breakfast. I do it. You should do it too.
What do you eat for breakfast?
I like Frosted Flakes, some fruit.
I mean, back to the leadership for a second. That's not something you can kind of, you know, study a guy on YouTube with and kind of pattern yourself after the way you could have, like, the way a guy's moves or something. Is there anybody you look to and kind of say, okay, that's sort of the way I want to lead, or that could fit my personality?
Maybe Luau. I think Lou has shown me a lot as a person, as a player. All that he's done in the community here, and in Africa. I think Lou has made a career for himself on the floor for sure, but a way bigger name off the floor with what he's done in the community.
Do you see the opportunities for that to be even more in Chicago, you know, given some of the issues there, the violence there? Do you think that, have you been able to experience that a little bit and kind of get out and see sort of what problems kids are having in that city specifically?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can't help but to notice that living here, being here, playing here, obviously. But, you know, I just got to continue to try to help and use my name, my platform to change things. It's hard, but I think it's very possible. I think that when you see kids on the South Side and what they're going through, this is a prime example to try to change it. You know, it starts with breakfast and then it could go to something else. But whatever it may be, I think the name Jimmy Butler attached to it definitely helps.
How is it that you guys are fighting for an 8 seed? Like, how is that possible? Besides injuries, like, it just looks so weird to see you guys 8th in the East.
I mean, the NBA is tough. I think there's a lot of good teams. Don't get me wrong. I think if you make the playoffs, you give yourself a chance to win anyway. 1 seed, 8 seed, all you got to do is get there. Whoever's playing basketball the best at the right time is going to be great.
Yeah, you know, you were saying it doesn't. As long as you get in, you feel like you could probably make some noise. Do you feel like that with this team, that it hasn't necessarily tapped its potential yet?
No, I don't think so. I think whenever we're healthy and everybody starts to get really comfortable with playing with one another, I think it'll all come around. I think they have me here for a reason. I'm never going to say that we're going to lose. So I like the group of guys that we have. I think everybody's working on the game. As long as everybody stays confident, I think our biggest thing all year was just playing defense as a whole, as a team.
Playing defense the way you've played it in the past.
Yeah. Even though we have a new coach, we can't lose our principles, our mentality of being the tougher team every night, going out guard and rebounding, things like that. Old coach, new coach, defense is always going to win games.
Do you think that identity is still there?
Oh, yeah, I know it is. I mean, we have the exact same team, so we did it before. I think we just lost that. I think we're starting to get it back, though. It's better late than never. So hopefully we hit the ground running whenever the playoffs get here.
Cool. Well, hey, Jimmy, I appreciate you doing this, and congratulations on the partnership and everything.
Brother, I really appreciate you.
Okay, thanks a lot, man. Take care.
Many thanks to the Bulls' Jimmy Butler and the writer who profiled him so thoroughly for SI, Ben Golliver, for joining us today on Open Floor, and thanks to everyone out there for listening. If you have any ideas for future guests, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can find me on Twitter at @SI_LeeJenkins and my producer, Alan Kim, at AlanXKim, and use the hashtag OpenFloor to get in touch with the show. Thanks again, and see you next week on Open Floor.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.